Hello gamers, it's Twitchy Max here. I have not done an episode for a long time. This is another mini episode. We're due to record an episode today with Eustace Viking, but he's a little bit poorly. So we're going to fly solo today. And I wanted to talk to you about a great game that was really pivotal in history that always comes up in our podcasts. And it's The Legend of Zelda. But I'm not talking about the new Tears of a Kingdom or Breath of the Wild. I'm talking about the original Legend of Zelda game. Now, this was a really pivotal game in gaming history for a number of reasons, and I'm going to give you 10 of them now. And this is in a vain hope that you'll take a look at the game, play it on an emulator through a browser, or play it, download it from the Switch marketplace and play it, because it really is a classic. Okay, so number one, open world design. The Legend of Zelda was one of the first games to offer an open world experience, allowing players to explore the game environment freely and without linear restrictions, a concept that's central to many popular games. So this is the case in Breath of the Wild. It's central to Forbidden West. It's central to Red Dead Redemption. It's central to GTA, but Zelda was one of the first games that did it. And you start the game, and on your screen, you've got your little picture of Link, who's the main protagonist. There's a cave, and there's nothing else apart from some tracks that you can follow. And most people go into the cave straight away, and a wizard, a mysterious wizard, gives you a sword, and that's your weapon for the beginning of the game. And there's no level that you've got to get through. It's not directing you in one way or another. You can explore the world. You can go to the different dungeons that are in the game in any order that you like. And it's something that was really innovative and unusual at the time. It was common at the time for you to be told what to do in video games. It was very clear what you needed to do, whereas Zelda gave you this freedom, which was very, very unusual. This non-linear gameplay, unlike most games of the time, didn't force players through a fixed sequence of levels. Players could tackle different parts of the game in any order they chose, making each playthrough unique. Now, each playthrough isn't 100% unique, because you go into a screen and it's always got the same bad guys on it in this pretty much in the same places, and you've got to do the same things. But it did mean that you could do things in a different order, and it would give you a sense of freedom, which is quite unusual when you compare it to something like Super Mario that came out at a similar time, which was a left to right linear platformer. Then there was the save feature. Now, we take for granted that we can save our games on our devices now, go away and come back maybe even years later. I have saved games from Half-Life 2 from 2011 and they still work. They're still in the cloud somewhere and I can use them. That didn't exist then. And a lot of games used to get around this by giving you a code that stored where you were in your level and how many lives you had or how much health you had. And some games didn't even let you do this at all. And if you died, you just had to start from the very beginning again, or you're expected to just leave your computer on or your console on and come back to it. Zelda was different. They had a cartridge that you put in your NES, your Nintendo Entertainment System, and within that had a battery. And that meant that you could save a small piece of data, which was your progress in the game, on the cartridge, Gabriel. You could turn it off and turn it back on, and you'd be able to start where you left off, because the game was such a long game. It takes many, many hours to complete. You needed that. Now, no one had done this before in a console. It was quite an unusual approach, and the actual disc cartridge for Nintendo Legend of Zelda was actually a little bit more expensive for them to make as well, because it had to have a battery in it and all that chip and functionality to store your progress. So that was very, very new and very, very innovative at the time. Complex puzzles. So the game introduced intricate puzzles and challenges within the dungeons, requiring players to use logic or game world resources, which significantly made the game easier if you knew about them. So there'd be places where you could place a bomb and it would blow up and a cave would be seen. And then inside it, there might be a boomerang, or inside it, there might be a new weapon that you can use. And that really made exploration much more fun. And you'd go into an area and there wouldn't be any hint that there's anything secret there, and it'd have to be trial and error. When this game came out, there was no internet. There was no way you could look up on your phone. There's no way to gibber or walk through. The only way that you could work out how to play the game was through your friends and their knowledge. So there was lots of trial and error. In places like the US, it was a little bit different, though, because they recognized that people needed help. So there was a phone line that you could call on and that you could say, I'm stuck on this bit, and they'd give you a hint and tell you what to do. And there'd be rows of people manning the phone lines with manuals for all the games, which is pretty exciting, pretty crazy, because there was just no internet back then. So these complex puzzles that were built into it really impacted the explorability of the game, which made it great. The next one is innovative combat. Now, it blended action adventure with real-time combat. So it's not an RPG. You're not taking turns. People are either swiping their sword at you in melee or they're shooting at you. Now, this wasn't completely new in video games, obviously. There's a lot of video games with similar combat. But the way they mix that up with the open world and the different kind of bad guys you could come across, it was pretty different. The boss fights were interesting as well, because different bosses have different attacks, which really spice up the game as you played it and upped the level of difficulty as well. Now, again, that wasn't completely innovative in that game, but they've just done it really well in Legend of Zelda. Its gibberoid meant the vast game world as well. So the game world was managed by a set of screens. So you've got small rectangles, and then you go to the edge of the screen, and then it loads the next rectangle, and then the next rectangle. And there was a big open world that you could walk around with different kind of biomes. So there'd be a water area, there'd be an area with forests, there'd be a desert area, and then there'd be entrances to dungeons. And the dungeons kind of all looked pretty similar, but they had different rooms in as well, and different keys for opening doors once you've killed mobs. So it was a huge game for the time, when you consider that they were talking about kilobytes when they were creating the game. How many kilobytes does this take up? Not gigabytes, not terabytes, not megabytes, but kilobytes. So it was a really vast, large game considering the medium through which it was delivered. So there was good storytelling in the game as well. And the reason I believe it's good is it doesn't tell you exactly what you're doing, where you're going, and what you need to do next. But there are people that you can talk to who give you a simple bit of information that helps you on your quest. So you start the game, you're in a cave, and Jibba says, it's dangerous to go alone. Here, take this, and they give you a sword. There's also fairies that give you all your hearts back. You can talk to various people in the game and get a little bit of snippet of information, but it doesn't spoil everything for you. The story, to be honest, isn't that amazing. You know, you're a young guy with a sword trying to save a princess. Princess Zelda, that's not a particularly original story, is it? But back in the 80s, those kind of stories weren't where the innovation was. The innovation was in the technology. And now, as the franchise has gone along, they've tried to change that a lot more. And Zelda is a much more powerful character. She's not just a princess in a pink dress. Next one is multiple items and upgrades. So in games now, you generally have upgrades, items, things you pick up, inventory to manage. A lot of games have inventory. Think about No Man's Sky. It's basically an inventory management game. It's not really a space exploration game, or at least it never used to be. And being able to pick up multiple different items that do different things, like bows and arrows and boomerangs. I never really quite understood why they had boomerangs, because it's a very Australian thing. Boomerangs, bombs, these are all different weapons that you could pick up in the game. You didn't start with them, and you can buy them, or you can find them in tombs. Then you've got other things as well that can help you. Now, these variety of tools that you can use really unlock specific areas of the game, like a bomb opening up a hidden cave. So they're really quite useful to you as you go along. And it's got a inventory screen where you have to use your D-pad, your direction pad, and you've only got two buttons. You've got A and B, select and start, actually. So it's probably more like three buttons that you can use. And they had a menu which allowed you to move around and select which items you wanted in your A and B slot, which was really innovative at the time. We take these things for granted now. and the amount of skill it must have taken to actually build that menu, given the memory and processor limitations that they had, is pretty amazing. The next one is the soundtrack and the audio. The music's quite iconic. They've used the music throughout the franchise and they've just increased its fidelity and developed it, but it's still the same music. The music was integral to the atmosphere of the game. It makes you feel like you're on a noble quest or an adventure. And if you're a Zelda fan like me, it kind of gives you shivers down the spine because you know that you're in for a lot of fun when you hear that music. You know, it is quite thematic and it has influenced a lot of other Nintendo games outside Nintendo and the other Zelda games as well. We've also got the cultural impact. So The Legend of Zelda marked the beginning of one of the iconic and enduring franchises in gaming history, and it's influenced countless other games and concepts that are still used in the industry today. So the ripples of this game have gone out into the world and helped create better games. A lot of the young people who were playing Zelda when they were kids grew up knowing what a good video game is like, and they've developed their own inspired by Zelda because of the fun that they had making it. So it really is a seminal piece of work that everyone should play, or at least try to play, because it gives you a really good view of where a lot of games have come from. So if you've never played Legend of Zelda, it's worth giving it a try. Now, there's a number of different ways you can play. You can play on emulators, you can play on the NES Mini. If you can get hold of an original NES, that's a really good way of doing it as well. Although you'll struggle to stick it into a modern TV because it's not got HDMI. A good way to play it is to have a look at some of the walkthroughs or get a copy of the map of the main area in the dungeons, because that'll show you where things are. And that gives you a bit of a guide of what you needed to do. And also there are some great YouTube videos that go through a walkthrough. There's one that's not even got any commentary on it. It's just someone playing the game. And it's had millions of views, that video. So I'm sure it's helped a lot of people to get unstuck in the game or work out what they need to do. It's a wonderful game. Give it a try. It's so much better than The Legend of Zelda 2. The Legend of Zelda 2, if I'm honest, isn't great, but the first one is great. It's worth at least an hour of your time just playing about and seeing if you can get into it. Okay, thanks for listening today. Hopefully next time we'll be back with Useless Viking and we'll be talking about Baldur's Gate.